The Patriot is WWTC Minneapolis St. Paul. FM 107.5, K298CO Minneapolis. Intelligent radio.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. A new poll finds that most Americans share many core values despite the country's deep political divide.
Most political polls reveal extreme partisanship, but a new APNORC survey found that about 9 in 10 U.S. adults say the right to vote, the right to equal protection under the law, and the right to privacy are important or very important to the U.S.'s identity as a nation. And while there was agreement on what it means to be an American, there was another more pessimistic result. The same poll found that only 3 in 10 Americans believe the country's democracy is functioning well. Greg Clugston, The White House.
Israel's military says that it has recovered the body of a 47-year-old farmer held hostage in Gaza. Meanwhile, negotiators are holding more talks on a ceasefire today in Egypt. This is SRN News.
This week in the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, the U.S. abandons Israel before the U.N. We'll hear from Brett Baer.
I thought it was a big, big moment.
It's an alarming shift, because we have long been Israel's most reliable ally.
The world essentially wants Hamas to win.
Join us for our program and sign up for our podcast at townhallreview.com.
Tune in to the Town Hall Review Saturdays at 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Sundays at 5 a.m. and 11 p.m. on AM 1280 The Patriot.
Retirement doesn't have to be complicated. Are you sick of all the fancy charts and investment mumbo-jumbo thrown at you to justify the Wall Street fees you're being charged? It's not the size of your nest egg that matters, but rather the income it can produce. Hi, I'm Mitch Lyons, best-selling author and star in a brand new Hollywood documentary called The Retirement Deception. In this film, we traveled over 20,000 miles interviewing real Americans who have retired successfully with a great lifestyle and peace of mind. They share their stories on how they get more retirement income with the same dollar saved, and the money is never at risk if the market crashes. That's right. If the market crashes 30%, you lose nothing. Even the super wealthy are shifting money into this new strategy because it increases their retirement income or can allow them to stop working years sooner. So if you are over 50 and want a bigger, better, stress-free retirement, call today to speak to a specialist and get a free copy of this brand new movie, The Retirement Deception. Call 888-365-1409. This is a $30 value, but when you call today, you get it completely free. So don't delay. Call right now, 888-365-1409. That's 888-365-1409.
And paid for by America First Tax Group. Attention, if you or your business is behind in filing your tax returns, or if you owe over $10,000 in back taxes to the IRS, please listen carefully. The IRS does not joke around and will not stop their collection efforts. If you're tired of the IRS letters, levies, liens, or wage garnishments and would like to get a fresh start, we can help. Due to the financial hardships in the country, the IRS is making it easier than ever to settle tax problems for those who owe more than $10,000. We can help settle your delinquent tax problems, end all collections, and may even reduce your back taxes significantly. Even if you can't afford to pay your back taxes, you can still get the help you need. We've helped thousands of taxpayers just like you, but you must call 800-852-3467 today to stop your tax problem from getting worse. The information is free, and the help is real. Call 800-852-3467. That's 800-852-3467. Again, 800-852-3467.
Looking for a new way to give back to your community, learn new skills, and make a real difference? Consider volunteering with your local fire department. The majority of U.S. firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers, answering the call when their community needs them. Be part of a dedicated team of volunteers who step up and protect their community from all types of hazards. You can be the difference. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Aside from helping your community and being there for those in need, being a member of the Volunteer Fire Service provides many benefits, including an opportunity to learn new skills and join a family that will serve with you, always have your back, and train you to be the best version of yourself. Your community needs you. Will you answer the call? Learn more and find a local volunteer opportunity at makemeafirefighter.org. That's makemeafirefighter.org.
With the vast majority of media today leaning hard left, it can be tricky to find news that actually shares, let alone defends, a conservative viewpoint. HotAir.com provides analysis and commentary from conservative writers like Ed Morrissey. HotAir.com.
Brighten someone's day with a free e-card from the largest online Christian greeting card site, CrossCards.com. There's one for every occasion, birthdays, holidays, or just to let someone know you care. CrossCards.com is a division of Salem Media Group.
World of Aviation is pre-recorded and paid for by Thunderbird Aviation.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
It's time for the World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation in Bloomington and by Thunderbird Aviation, with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. Here now is your host, Al Malmberg.
Thanks, Doc. This morning, we're going to visit with Paul Dye, who grew up in Minnesota, learned how to fly at the Anoka County Airport, earned his aeronautical engineering degree from the University of Minnesota. From there, he went to work for NASA and was the flight director on 39 shuttle missions. And now, he's going to be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame on April 20th. The banquet will be held at Mystic Lake Convention Center in Prior Lake. You can order tickets up until April 12th. Paul, great to have you on the show, and congratulations on your forthcoming induction.
Well, thank you very much, Al. It's great to be here. It's always great to talk to anybody in Minnesota. So thank you for asking.
My pleasure. I also understand you're getting the Writer's Award this year.
I understand that too, and I think that's really a treat, and I'm very appreciative of that. Our book came out a couple years ago, but back in at a time when it was difficult to promote books, so very grateful for that honor.
What is the title of the book, and if you can give us a synopsis, what it's all about?
Sure. It's called Shuttle Houston, My Life in the Center Seat of Mission Control, and that's basically what it's about. It's 30 years of operations and inside stories of what it's like to operate the space shuttle system, planning, training for, and flying missions from the perspective of the flight director who's in charge of making all that happen. So we've got stories of missions and how it works, and if people want to know what the inside scoop was on how the space shuttle worked and how we operated it, that's all in the book.
Just out of curiosity, I had Homer Hickam on the show a couple of years ago, and he wrote the book October Sky that the movie was based on his life.
Yep.
Did you ever run into him at NASA?
Homer is one guy that I did not meet. He was a little before my time. I mean, we were there together, but at different centers. So he was in the Huntsville Marshall Space Flight Center, and we just never crossed paths.
Let's go back to you're born in Bemidji. You're raised in Minnesota. You get your pilot's license at the Anoka County Airport. What was the driving force behind you wanting to fly?
That is a mystery, Al. I can never remember a time in my life when I was not fascinated by flying machines.
Huh.
I have very early memories of sitting in front of a black and white television in Bemidji when I was must have been 4 years old, seeing Whirlybirds and Sky King,
yeah,
and being fascinated by it. So I, of course, flew model airplanes, built model airplanes, flew model rockets, and just always wanted to be involved in aviation.
Yeah, you know, you and me both. In fact, my brother Dave and I, we still laugh our heads off when we talk about. We called it the shed, but it was really a two-car garage that was in our backyard, and we took scrap lumber and tried building an airplane.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We did that, and the only thing that saved me probably is that I lived in a suburb and I didn't have a barn to jump out of.
Ah, what kids do, huh?
So yeah, you bet.
Do you remember who your first flight instructor was at Anoka?
Oh, absolutely. So his name was Jim Brightbill. So a little background. When I was 13, an FBO out there in Anoka County, Henderson Aviation, he had several leaseback customers who were members of the 3M Aviation Club, and they decided to form an Explorer Post, which is teens who are learning about aviation and doing that. And he had two wrecked J3 Cubs that he'd bought, and our job was to get them flying, was to rebuild them, tear them down, recover them, put them back together with the help of the adults, of course. And then for every 2 hours that we worked on them, and we did that a couple of nights a week, we got an hour of airplane time for gas and oil, which at the time I think was $4.50.
Wow. Wow.
And then he had one of his instructors, Jim Brightbill, who I believe was a school principal in his real life. Seemed old at the time, but I think he was a young fellow, who donated his flight instruction time for $5 an hour.
Wow.
So my dual instruction in a J3 Cub cost $9.50 an hour.
Isn't that something? What year,
it was just amazing.
What year would that have been, approximately?
That would have been, I'm sitting here actually looking at my shirt tail on my office wall from my solo, which was 1975.
Isn't it amazing how we keep that? I don't know any pilot who did not keep the shirt tail that is cut out and all the information put down on that day.
Yeah, mine is framed, and it's probably the most, of all the things I have on my wall, it's one of the things I'm most proud of.
Yeah, amazing. I've got a feeling, speaking of being proud, that first flight instructor, when you went to work for NASA, I am sure he went, wow, I am so proud of him. I would think so.
You know, I would love, I've never run across him again. I would love to run across him. My private pilot examiner was Waldo Anderson.
No kidding.
And I understand a couple years ago, I traded notes with him.
Huh.
And I was thinking, boy, he must be pretty old.
You know, and he looks
know
great.
Still around or not.
And I've got a feeling he'll be at the banquet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That'll be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be fun. I remember that I went to take the check ride, and it was at the university flight facilities there, just two hangars down, and it was in a 150 because we had to have instruments, you know,
yep.
And not a 152, but a 150 with the old pull starter. And I went to start it up, and I pulled, and the starter whirred, but it wouldn't engage.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, oh, this is horrible. I'm going to miss out on my check ride, and I have no money left. And he said, you've been flying that J3 down the line. I said, yeah. And he said, okay, I'll hand prop you.
Oh.
And he got out, and he hand propped it, and we went off and flew the check ride.
Wow. That's a great memory. And I bet you Waldo will remember that.
I hope he does. That would be great.
You know, talking about repairing those planes and getting them up and running had something to do with you wanting to go into aeronautical engineering.
Probably. I mean, I think I knew early on that I didn't just want to be an airline pilot, and I was wearing glasses, and I knew I wasn't going to be a military pilot. And to me, aeronautical engineering, this sounded like the right thing to do.
Right up your alley. After the University of Minnesota, you went down, if I remember correctly in reading your bio, you went down to Texas. Is that true?
Yeah, so when I was a junior in college in engineering, near the end of my junior year, I got the opportunity to sign up for a cooperative education program with NASA in Houston. And I had absolutely no idea what that meant or what I would do, but I packed up a backpack on my motorcycle and rode to Houston in September of 80, I guess, and then it was a quarter there and a quarter back at school and a quarter down there and for 2 years while I finished up college, and then they hired me full time when I was done.
Wow. How long were you down there?
I was temporarily misassigned in Southern Texas for 34 years. the best thing you can say about it is that the flying weather was generally good most of the year, and you didn't have to preheat. But it was pretty flat, pretty hot, and pretty humid all the time.
Yeah.
And you got to be part of the space shuttle program. So that was the best part about it.
How often did you pinch yourself thinking, I can't believe it, I'm working at NASA?
You know, you had to do that every once in a while. I was a flight controller for a dozen years, and that was pretty amazing. And then I was selected as flight director and did that for 20 years.
Wow.
And every once in a while, you had to remind yourself that there are millions of people who are enamored by the space program who would give absolutely anything to have been a part of one, a small part of one single mission in any way. And we just did it over and over every single day. It was what we did.
Yeah. You know, even when you were just saying that, I thought, you know, how many of us would just love to go tour NASA?
Right, right. You know, we used to basically say that they paid us what they pay civil servants. You know, we didn't make a fortune. We were comfortable. But most of us would have done that job for a sandwich and a camp cot.
I bet.
You know, it just was amazing to be part of.
Paul, we're going to take a break. We'll continue this conversation with Paul Dye, who will be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame in just a couple of weeks, coming up on April 20th. You're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, where I learned to fly, two locations in the Twin Cities, Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie, and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation. There is no time like the present to start your career in aviation. The aviation industry is hiring, and Academy College is here to help you turn your goals into reality. Earn a 2 or 4 year degree in business or aviation. Select a career-specific course that will enhance your knowledge. If you are an aviation enthusiast, you can enroll in the Commercial Pilot Aviation Management or the FAA-approved dispatch course. What makes Academy College unique is they truly want to meet their students where they are. They understand that everyone's circumstances are different, and they want to support you and see you succeed. They can help you achieve this by allowing the flexibility to attend classes in person or virtually. With small class sizes, hands-on instruction, and a competitive atmosphere, it's another way of ensuring that when you graduate, you will be a true competitor. Live up to your potential. The sky's the limit with the support of Academy College. Next quarter begins April 8th. Don't delay. Email admissions at academycollege.edu.
The Patriot is proud to air the Pledge of Allegiance every weekday morning at 7:30 a.m., brought to you by Furniture Manor of Osseo. If you're a veteran, current service member, or first responder, we would like to honor your service by having you recite the pledge. Please call the Patriot today, and we'll book a time for you to visit our Egan studio. Call 651-289-4410. Listen to Pledge of Allegiance weekdays at 7:30 a.m., brought to you by Furniture Manor of Osseo on AM 1280, The Patriot.
Mike Gallagher here. More than 200 members of Congress are standing up for AM radio listeners. The AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act will keep AM radio in cars, because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to pass this critical legislation now. Text AM to 52886 or visit dependonam.com for more information. That's dependonam.com for more details. Message and data rates may apply, and you may text Stop to stop.
A commercial airliner cannot take off without the signed release of the captain and a dispatcher. That is how crucial flight dispatchers are to the industry. Academy College in Bloomington offers a 6 or 10 week FAA-approved flight dispatcher course. This course is an intensive course that covers regulations, meteorology, aircraft systems, and performance, along with so much more. The FAA-approved dispatcher course is approved by airlines throughout the industry. Class sizes are limited to maintain a healthy instructor-to-student ratio. For those who qualify, this program is eligible for the application of VA benefits. Academy College is located in Bloomington at the crossroads of 35W and 494. For more information, visit Academy's website at academycollege.edu. That's academycollege.edu. Next quarter begins April 8th. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Paul Dye is our guest. He was with NASA for well over 30 years. In fact, he was the flight director on 39 shuttle missions. And Paul, do you recall, you remember that first the first lesson that you had? Do you recall the first shuttle flight that you were involved with, and in what capacity were you doing? What were you doing on that mission?
Well, let's see. My very first shuttle mission in any capacity, I was wandering around for the very first shuttle flight, STS-1, as just a runner, running data around the back rooms. I was a co-op student, and so. But the first one where I was a flight controller plugged in was STS-9. I was in charge of the Space Lab computer systems. And so we were running these, making sure that the computers kept running, the very, very small computers that were serving the payload, science payloads of that. And, you know, I came into NASA with an aeronautical engineering degree and silk scarf and goggles. And my specialty was aircraft design and flight testing. And they said, perfect, you're just what we need. We're going to put you in charge of these computers. And so that's what I watched for that mission. But I realized from the very beginning that I was interested in the big picture, and I was watching everything and every system and how the flight director conducted the mission and how the flight plan worked. And so I was always looking at the big picture, and it was very exciting. You had to just kind of pinch yourself that you were actually in mission control, being a part of the flight.
It's got to be an absolutely incredible feeling, knowing that you're a part of that. Is it tense? Are tense more than exciting, or exciting more than tension, or what's the emotion?
That's a really good question, Al. You know, in the early days, we didn't have the relay satellites that we have now, where you basically have almost continuous coverage, continuous contact with the spacecraft. So back then, we had used ground sites, and you had like 3 minutes of contact and 8 minutes of no contact, and then maybe 6 minutes of contact and 20 minutes of no contact. And so you had very, very intense bursts of, we got to look at the data, we have to send commands, we have to recommend to the crew what they need to do, and then we're not going to be able to talk to them for 10 minutes.
Wow.
And so that was always very concentrated. The question we frequently get is how do you handle the stress of having the vehicle and the crew's lives in your hands. And my answer is, if you're prone to reacting to stress, you're in the wrong business. You just have to kind of come to the business with the ability to compartmentalize that.
I've often, when I've thought about that, about the emotion level, I think you take an air traffic controller in our aviation system and just magnify that many times over. Would that be accurate?
It's similar, but, you know, I would never put down what those guys have to put up with. They're trying to create a mental image of what's going on up there, and they've got a lot of people's lives in their hands. We would have a crew, you know, 7 people, 8 people, or 5 people, and a priceless national asset. But, you know, you really are just you have to be able to put that out of your mind and just get the job done and work through the problems. In training, we would be thrown dozens of problems to be working at a single time. Mm-hmm. And so you develop the ability when you got up in flight and everything was working fine, it was almost dull. And you were just executing, but you always knew you had that reserve capacity to handle all sorts of problems and the malfunctions at the same time, because that's how we trained. So we kind of trained that reaction to stress out of people.
Could you give us an idea of what type of problems they would throw at you when you were doing the simulation?
Oh, sure. You know, any system could fail. The computers could fail, and you'd lose data, or your communications would fail or partially fail. You'd lose data. A big one is a cabin leak, which could either be induced by a failure in the system, a blown line, or a micrometeoroid. You can have fuel leaks. You can have prop leaks, jet leaks. You can have electrical failures where just the run of the mill. There are so many different circuit breakers and so many different circuits and electrical buses that they could fail. And when you lose an electrical bus, then you'd have to figure out, well, now what equipment have we lost? Because almost all equipment had 2 or 3 power feeds to it. And so you might lose a bus, but then you'd have to, and you wouldn't have an immediate effect, but what would that happen if the next worst failure happened? And so you were always working those kind of things. And then it could be something really simple, like the crew calls down and says, the camera won't work, right? Because cameras are important too, and you've got to work that and try and psych that out. And then during ascent and entry, there are very, very high activity levels. Of course, you're flying an airplane at Mach 25, basically, or when you're down in the atmosphere, down around Mach 17. And so anything that goes bad very, very fast. And you have to be able to react to those type things. And we'd have control issues, navigation issues, problems with systems failing and computers failing, and so all sorts of interesting things to work.
Did you ever see a mission where everything was perfect, nothing went awry?
Well, I mean, somebody always lost their spoon, right? I mean, so you never have a mission that was absolutely perfect. But we flew a lot of missions that were pretty routine and went pretty well. And you'd say they were 97% perfect, and the 3% that wasn't perfect was trivial.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe, when you say trivial, maybe to you, but to the rest of us, you'd have to know everything, the minutest detail of each and every shuttle to be able to troubleshoot on the fly like that.
Right. Now, you have to remember that we've got a pretty big team of people that are supporting the flight director. And so when you see Mission Control on television, you see a room with about a dozen people in it. Each one of those is a specialist in either systems or trajectory or operations like flight planning and the like. And so they're all watching over things. You've got the mechanical systems officer, the guidance navigation control officer, the data processing systems officer. They're all looking at their stuff. Each one of those people has between 2 and 10 people supporting them in a back room. So they've got a pretty good team. And so the amount of knowledge that they can feed to the flight director is astounding. Now, we always say that the flight director is like the conductor of an orchestra. We may not know how to play every instrument, but we kind of know how the overall piece should sound. And I always warn my flight controllers, don't be surprised. I can make noise on almost any one of the instruments if I have to. But the team effort is what is so important. And somebody always is going to have some bit of knowledge that you're going to need to solve the problem.
I've got a feeling that the people at NASA and the specialists that you're talking about, they never had a problem with the VCR era trying to figure out how could you possibly be recording a channel when your TV is not on that channel.
No, but I walked into a few friends' houses that were still blinking 12 o'clock on their VCRs back in the old days.
I remember with great fondness trying to explain that to my parents when they got their first VCR, and my dad saying, okay, so how is it that records on channel 5 when the TV is on channel 4? I don't get it.
Yeah. So I was a volunteer firefighter for 25 years in our small community right next to the Space Center, and it was an interesting fire department because almost every one of the our volunteer firefighters was in the space program and with an engineer.
Wow.
And we approached firefighting very differently than some small rural fire department out in the middle of Texas.
In what way? interesting. What way would you treat it differently? Handle it differently?
Well, you know, a lot of guys really wanted to come in and put water on the red, put the wet stuff on the red stuff without asking any questions. And we'd walk in and we'd smell a little bit of smoke and we'd go, that smells like fluorescent light ballast. I know that. Let's just track that to the room. And would you give me a screwdriver? Oh, here you go, ma'am. You just had a ballast burnout on your kitchen light. You just take this in and get it fixed. It's all safe. We're going home.
That's great.
Yeah.
When you would show up at a home that's having an issue, potentially a fire, did most of the residents understand that most of you guys worked at NASA as well?
Sure, because they all worked at NASA.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah. That's pretty funny. It really is. We've got to look at, the shuttle program is over, and I've got a feeling there's a lot of people that are disappointed in that. And I'll ask you, were you disappointed when they decided to end the shuttle program? And what's the future going to hold for this, the next stage?
Yes, I was disappointed when we stopped flying the shuttle because we had a lot of flights left in the shuttles. It was a hazardous business, but I have been in a hazardous flying business my entire life. I've had a lot of people go out and not come back that I knew. And we could have done a lot of great things with the shuttle. The shuttle was conceived as a way to build and service the space station. Well, we built the space station. It took us about 35 missions to do that. And then as soon as we finished, we retired the shuttle. So we no longer had the capability to bring large payloads back. But false starts happen and things like that, and people make decisions. It was just something that happened. And so I wryly and with a smile and a wink say I'm kind of – one part of me says I'm glad they retired the shuttle because I was getting a little too old to keep doing that stuff, and they retired my airplane before I had to choose to retire. It would have been very, very difficult to leave it, if it was still flying. But sure. I do wish it was still flying. Now, that said, we move on, and we move into the future. the space station is doing a great job. People used to ask me a few years ago, you know, when are we going to put Americans back in space? And I said, you know, they've been up there continuously since 2001, continuously. Yeah. And we have not had a point where we didn't have an American up there in all that time. And we were going up on Soyuzes, but they were going up. Now we have the SpaceX capability to bring people up. We may soon have Orion going up with Boeing. We're in a transition period where we're trying to figure out how to get out and do more in space. My personal feeling all along has been I really want man to go to Mars, but I think the best way to do that is to go back to the moon and set up an infrastructure there. Because as an old flight director, I would a lot rather have an emergency with my life support system 2.5 days from home than 6 months from home.
Yeah.
And so, I think we need to go and learn how to live on another planet, and the moon will serve for that before we put ourselves out a long way. I am an absolute fan of what we did for Apollo and landing men on the moon. I was trained by the people who did that. But in a sense, we did it to a deadline. It was a great idea. And then once we had done it, we didn't have a continuing plan. When we go to Mars, I want to have a continuing plan.
Well, we're going to take a break. We'll continue our conversation with Paul Dye, who spent decades with NASA. He'll be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame at Mystic Lake Convention Center in Prior Lake on April 20th. Tickets are available until April 12th. You're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation with two locations in the Twin Cities Metro, Flying Cloud Airport at Eden Prairie, and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation. When you enroll in the Apprenticeship Support Program at Academy College, you will earn as you learn. Aircraft maintenance technicians are extremely sought after right now, and Academy uses the proven approach of hands-on learning in addition to an educational element to prepare you to become a certified aviation mechanic in 30 months. Academy College offers support to those interested in becoming an apprentice and to those looking to hire one. The next open house will be on April 17th. Call 952-851-0066. Mother's Day is May 12th. Celebrate your mom this year by getting her the experience of flight. Book a scenic flight for the two of you over the Twin Cities, seeing the places that have created wonderful memories for you both from above, all while creating new ones. She will appreciate spending time with you and reminiscing while capturing the picturesque scenes of the Twin Cities area. To book a scenic flight, visit ThunderbirdAviation.com. That's ThunderbirdAviation.com.
Did you hear Michelle Tafoya interview Al Michaels? What about Bob Costas? Hear her fascinating take on those two and more on the Salem Podcast Network. Hear intelligent radio through your smart speaker. Just say, play the Patriot, Minneapolis.
Would you buy a brand new furnace and heat pump today if it were half price? We have one brand new Rheem furnace and heat pump from GTS HVAC Inc., and we're selling it for half price. You get a new furnace and heat pump installed, valued at $16,000, for just $8,000. Hurry, there's only one available. Call the station for details at 651-405-8800 or find it online at am1280thepatriot.com/half-off or email office at salemtc.com. All available rebates and tax credits apply.
If you can snap your fingers, you can find this radio station. Your smartphone is now your smart radio. There are no limitations on where you can find us. We're always on. It's liberty and truth through your smart speaker. Just say, play Freedom Radio, Minneapolis.
Spring is here, and it is such a beautiful time to experience the Twin Cities and the surrounding areas from the air. Book a scenic flight with Thunderbird Aviation and take in views of Lake Minnetonka. Cruise over the state capitol and circle over downtown Minneapolis. Fly over your home and take an evening flight and see the lights of the Twin Cities. Just make sure to bring your camera. For more information, visit ThunderbirdAviation.com. That's ThunderbirdAviation.com. Mother's Day is fast approaching, and what better way to celebrate Mom by booking her a Discovery flight at Thunderbird Aviation, located at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie or the Crystal Airport. With this experience, she will take flight with a certified instructor, and she'll even fly the plane herself. As you have flown the nest or are planning to, why shouldn't she take flight herself? To book now, visit ThunderbirdAviation.com.
That's ThunderbirdAviation.com. You're listening to the World of Aviation. Paul Dye, who worked with NASA for several decades, is our guest. He'll be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame on April 20th. And one of the things that I want to mention, coming up on April 13th, Fred Naur, Assistant Chief Flight Instructor at Thunderbird Aviation, will continue his review of the ForeFlight electronic flight bag with a discussion of all the weather information available on that app. Also, he'll be finishing up some leftovers from the February seminar, and he will show how the app makes flying VFR and IFR flights plans very easy in comparison to not using that. And again, that's going to be on Saturday, April 13th. You can go to Thunderbird's website for more information at thunderbirdaviation.com. Again, that's April 13th. Paul Dye is our guest, and he was with NASA and was flight director for 39 shuttle missions, which is incredible. We were talking about the future and what's going to be happening. How do you and those who have been at NASA feel about private companies getting involved with space exploration?
Well, that's a really good question, and I answer that in a very positive way. When I hop on an airliner to fly to Minneapolis or whatever, I don't hop on United States government airlines. I hop on Southwest or United or Delta or whoever. And I think that it's important to recognize that that's the phase that we're in space transportation. I think that it's perfectly reasonable to have commercial companies doing transport of people and cargo and science and whatever, so that NASA can spend its limited budget on exploration and get back to doing that exploration. We desperately needed the space shuttle in order to build the space station, and the space station is a cooperative international project where we're doing a tremendous amount of science. And not that that science isn't just esoteric science. It's how do we keep a life support system running continuously for years so that we can understand what fails and how we can go to Mars and keep one running. But I think that having commercial operations like SpaceX and Blue Origins and various other companies get into the commercial transportation is a great thing and a great idea.
We were talking about all the problems that you prepare for when you're, you know, it's like pilots. We get in the simulator and have different
right.
things thrown at us. And I'm sure you've been asked this question a million times. The movie Apollo 13. Ron Howard's movie with Tom Hanks. Did that accurately portray what was going on at Mission Control during the problem?
That is probably the best movie that gives the people an insight of what it's like inside a mission when things go wrong. It is one that we hold up as a standard. Now, things are simplified. It's a 2.5-hour movie. It's from Hollywood. So, you know, they kind of represent that there was one astronaut sitting in the command module simulator trying to figure out how to power up the spacecraft. That was 100 people doing that job. We understand that when you're trying to tell a story in a 2.5-hour movie, you have to simplify that.
Yeah.
But aside from that, the process of problem solving, we will never give up. We're going to work the problems. That is core to Mission Control, and they did a really good job.
You know, the one thing I really liked about that movie, it showed the agony and the pressure that the families were going through, and the press being in the front yard, and the anguish that the families were going through. And I thought it really did a great job of showing the reality of that aspect of it.
Yeah, and you know, it also highlights the fact that the neighbors are all part of the program, and the neighbors are going to protect the families. And that's what we did. Our community was mostly space people, and so we were going to make sure that everybody was treated the way we wanted them to be treated. And so it is a challenge when your loved one is in harm's way. That is what we have chosen to do with our lives as a profession. But you have to recognize that has implications for the family as well.
Is there any inside information that you have that you can share with us of what the future is going to be, what is replacing the shuttle? Is that something that can be talked about?
Anything can be talked about. You know, the NASA program is unclassified. It always has been. But I'll be honest, I've been out of the program for about 11 years, so I kind of watch some Facebook feeds, and I still have phone numbers to talk to. But, you know, essentially NASA is working on building an exploration infrastructure, which is transportation plus probably a space station around the moon, so that then that can enable landings and the development of moon bases, and at the same time allowing things like letting SpaceX and the other companies do the transportation in low Earth orbit and maybe lunar cyclers and the like. But it's always a question of there are numerous good ideas out there that have to be looked at. And at any one time, there's probably half a dozen or a dozen programmatic ideas that are being studied at NASA to see which one is going to move ahead. And until it does, it's kind of hard to tell where you should invest your heart, soul, and mind.
With the new program, is it going to be like the shuttle where they can be reused? And that begs the question, if that's the case, is the idea to take a shuttle-type aircraft, fly it to the moon, land it on the moon? And that brings up all kinds of questions of how do you construct a landing strip on the moon when you look at the surface? I mean, how do you put the Vassy and Pappy lights on it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, that probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense since there's no air to stop you, you know, to push against your wings.
Yeah.
So it's not winged flight. So it's always probably going to be vertical landing. I think it's going to look a lot different than what Buck Rogers looked like. And I think that right now NASA is not working on winged vehicles like the shuttle was. There are a couple of companies that are looking at that option. But you see things more like what SpaceX is doing with their Starship, which is more of a Buck Rogers kind of rocket, but it's going to land vertically and take off vertically off of the moon, and so I think you're going to see different concepts than what we've done. I personally am a bit disappointed that we're not moving on towards another winged vehicle, but there are winged orbital vehicles that are flying autonomously. They are classified, but their existence is not classified. Boeing's been flying one for almost a decade, where it goes up and it stays up for over a year and a half, and then comes back and lands. Looks kind of like a miniature shuttle. And that technology is still available and can be used when it's appropriate. The important thing to recognize is that rather than locking into a concept and then trying to make it fit the mission, you need to build a concept to fit the mission from the start. Because otherwise, it's like trying to carry cargo in a Cessna 150 or using a 747 as a primary trainer, and that doesn't make any sense.
You just said something really interesting. The Boeing, this thing was up in the air continuously for a year, approximately.
What
was the energy source that they were using, or were they refueling in the air?
No. Once you're in orbit, it takes, if you're high enough orbit to get out of the atmospheric drag, you don't need any energy source to keep going. Momentum keeps you there. Mm-hmm. As we always used to say, Newton is driving. Now, I think that spacecraft like that uses solar panels to generate electricity to keep the systems running. That's kind of like the space station, which has continuously been up there for over 20 years. We do reboost that once in a while. It's low enough, it's only 200 miles up, that it needs a little bit of thrust now and again because it's being dragged on by the atmosphere, by the tendrils, the occasional molecule that it hits. But objects that are high enough orbit, basically they just stay on orbit forever.
I just thought of something. Another guy being inducted this year into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame is Kurt Brown, who flew the shuttles. Did you guys happen to know each other?
Yeah, we know each other. We didn't share a lot of mission prep training. Our missions didn't overlap that much. But I was flight director for a couple of on second shift or third shift for a couple of Kurt's missions. So we overlapped.
When you were going to the University of Minnesota and you're going after your aeronautical engineering degree, did you ever think that this would lead to NASA, or what was in your mind at that time?
I intended to go to Alexandria, work for Belanca, and build Vikings.
No kidding.
That's what I was going to do.
Wow.
Sure. And I didn't want to go to, no offense to our Wichita listeners, but it was kind of one of the things that pointed me to take the NASA co-op position after my junior year of college was that Belanca had kind of gone fallow or gone bankrupt at the time. And I wasn't savvy enough to know that that's just aviation. You go bankrupt, you come back. You go bankrupt, you come back, and over again. Mm-hmm. So that's how I ended up in Houston. But, I expected to be building and flying and testing airplanes.
Incredible. We are going to take a break, Paul, and we will continue. We'll find out what you're doing today. I know you're still doing a lot of flying, and we'll talk about that. Paul Dye is our guest, spent decades at NASA, and you're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, two locations in the Twin Cities, Flying Cloud Airport at Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is the World of Aviation. There is no time like the present to start your career in aviation. The aviation industry is hiring, and Academy College is here to help you turn your goals into reality. Earn a 2 or 4 year degree in business or aviation. Select a career-specific course that will enhance your knowledge. If you are an aviation enthusiast, you can enroll in the Commercial Pilot Aviation Management or the FAA-approved dispatch course. What makes Academy College unique is they truly want to meet their students where they are. They understand that everyone's circumstances are different, and they want to support you and see you succeed. They can help you achieve this by allowing the flexibility to attend classes in person or virtually. With small class sizes, hands-on instruction, and a competitive atmosphere, it's another way of ensuring that when you graduate, you will be a true competitor. Live up to your potential. The sky's the limit with the support of Academy College. Next quarter begins April 8th. Don't delay. Email admissions at academycollege.edu.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles with an auto warranty about to expire or with no warranty coverage at all. Due to a decline in the economy, CarShield is announcing a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is now available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Yes, you heard that correctly. Pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. An open phone line has been established for all drivers to call for a free quick quote. Call 800-353-2973 now. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Call us for your free quick quote today. 800-353-2973. That's 800-353-2973. What do you have to lose? Call 800-353-2973. Again, 800-353-2973.
A commercial airliner cannot take off without the signed release of the captain and a dispatcher. That is how crucial flight dispatchers are to the industry. Academy College in Bloomington offers a 6 or 10 week FAA-approved flight dispatcher course. This course is an intensive course that covers regulations, meteorology, aircraft systems, and performance, along with so much more. The FAA-approved dispatcher course is approved by airlines throughout the industry. Class sizes are limited to maintain a healthy instructor-to-student ratio. For those who qualify, this program is eligible for the application of VA benefits. Academy College is located in Bloomington at the crossroads of 35W and 494. For more information, visit Academy's website at academycollege.edu. That's academycollege.edu. Next quarter begins April 8th. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Paul Dye is our guest. He will be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame April 20th at the Mystic Lake Casino and Convention Center. Tickets are available online at the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame website. You can just Google that and you can find it. You can order tickets up until April 12th, and I'd recommend you do that sooner than later because I know that it's just about sold out, and it's always such a great time to be at the banquet. I look forward to being there every single year. We're speaking with Paul Dye, spent decades at NASA, 39 shuttle missions as the flight director. Paul, you said you retired about 11 years ago, but that hasn't, you haven't neglected your love of aviation. So what are you doing these days?
Well, that's good. Yeah, you know, they always say that you never knew how busy you were until you retire, and you just can't figure out if you had any time to work.
Exactly.
But I've always been flying airplanes. I've always been testing airplanes. I owned airplanes since I was started at NASA and worked on them, and got into experimental aviation, home built aircraft. A few years before I retired, I was asked to start writing for Kit Planes magazine. And then when I retired from NASA, they asked me to take over the magazine. So I ran Kit Planes as editor-in-chief for about 6.5 years. And the toughest thing about running a monthly magazine is for some reason they expect you to do one every single month. and it gets a little tiring after a while. So I arranged to get a new editor-in-chief, and I became editor-at-large. Now, what does all that mean? It means that I get to go out and fly airplanes and test airplanes. I build airplanes myself. I've got, we're working on our 6th airplane that I've built right now. That's an F-1 rocket. And then I do a lot of evaluation flying for the magazine. So we do flight reviews. We go out and test the airplane and write about it for our readers. And I also do contract test flying for companies that want me to evaluate airplanes and tell them. I know most of the people in the home-built kit industry, and we're talking some very high-performance airplanes. And they call me up and say, I think it's time for you to come give this thing a try and tell us what you think about it. So here in our hangar today, we've got my wife and I, who also flies, but she's a geology professor. She flies incidentally because she wants to see the Earth from the air. We've got 3 RVs, an RV3, an RV6, and an RV8. We have a Dream Tundra, which is kind of like a home-built Cessna 170. We've got a motor glider, a Xenos motor glider, but we built it with a twist. Instead of putting a VW engine on the front, we put an electric motor on the front, so it's an electric motor glider. And then I have my little Subsonics jet, which is a little single-engine, single-seat jet, which I love to go fly around. And I actually flew it to Oshkosh from here at our home near Carson City back in 2019, I think it was. It took 9 legs, 8 fuel stops to get it to Oshkosh.
Wow.
It's a short-range jet, but it's quite fun. And then we're building an F-1 rocket, which is a really beefed up, very similar to an RV. I get to consult on aviation matters. I'm a EAA technical counselor and flight advisor, and I was recently appointed by the FAA as a designated airworthiness representative. So I issue airworthiness certificates to experimental aircraft after inspecting them, of course. So we're pretty deeply involved living in an air park and just living the life. It's fun to have a day where you start off testing an airplane and then you come back and you do an oil change on something else and then go work in the shop on some sheet metal work or some avionics or some wiring for a couple hours and then take another airplane up for sunset flying.
Incredible. I've got to ask if you can go into more detail about this F-1 rocket.
Sure. The F-1 rocket is a design came out of Texas, but it was the kits were built in the Czech Republic back in the early 2000s, and we picked up an untouched quick build kit from 2004 just last December. It was an incredible find with an IO 540. So it's a 2-seat tandem aircraft. It'll cruise about 200 knots. It'll do faster than that if you want to burn the gas. Tremendous climb capability. If you're familiar with an RV8, which has usually 180 horse O360, this is basically the same size airplane with an IO 540, 260 horsepower. So that kind of tells you an idea you know, you can never have too much horsepower.
I've got to ask you, do you have any muscle cars from the 60s?
I don't. I kind of skipped the whole car thing. I was working on airplanes when I was 13, and so I do have a nice little sports car, the MX-5 from Mazda that I enjoy driving around. But no, I never got into the muscle car phase.
How about motorcycles? My oldest brother, he said to me one day, he said, you know, being a pilot, I'm surprised that you've never purchased a motorcycle. How about you?
I have owned a couple of motorcycles. When I went to NASA, all I had was a motorcycle for the first couple of years. But I'm not a fanatic like folks who really enjoy them. I've owned a few along the way, and then I mentioned the Xenos motor glider. The guts of the propulsion system, the electrical, came out of an electric motorcycle that we bought and took apart.
Wow.
And that was kind of fun to ride it around for a month or so before we disassembled it.
Do you enjoy flying gliders, non-propelled flight?
Yeah, I enjoy flying gliders, although as a power guy, it's hard not to always be looking for the runway to make sure you still have enough energy to make the runway.
Yeah.
It's hard to get over that. And, of course, the shuttle was what we referred to as the heavy glider. When it came back from space, it was a glider all the way to landing. So you got very good at spot landing about 300 knots.
Did you happen to see the movie Space Cowboys?
I did.
Did you laugh your head off?
That's the best way to watch that movie, is to laugh your head off. You just have to enjoy. What I enjoyed most about it was the actors. It was kind of an ensemble cast of classic actors that were kind of fun to watch and do their thing. But just don't take any of the technical stuff at face value.
I thought the most realistic part of the movie was when they're trying to run around a track.
Yeah, that's about it.
Anybody who's ever who's gotten over 60 years old related to that, going, well, that's real.
Yeah, that's right. One of my classmates in the flight director training, we would select a couple of flight directors every couple of years, so we had a classmate or two, and he was given a responsibility to be a technical advisor for that movie, and we still remind him of that when we get together. Because they didn't listen to him.
Well, I was going to say he must have been pulling his hair out. I mean, because
but it was entertainment. You know, you got to remember it was not a documentary; it was entertainment.
Yeah. Well, and at the end when they're coming in for a landing and he's too high and he's too fast and he pulls the nose up to lose altitude, and I thought I suppose that would be possible in a shuttle. To bring the nose up and to bleed off airspeed, but it'd be a little more difficult than flying a 172 Cessna.
It doesn't work that well that way. The simulator would do things that the real shuttle would not, and we would have fun with it in our off hours. But we pretty much learned to fly by the book, and that's why I get called to fly and test airplanes these days, is because I'm known as someone who flies by the book and always tries to stay ahead of the airplane and keep myself at least one out to stay alive.
Yep.
So I don't plan to fly to die in an airplane.
Yep, that's the perfect plan. Your book, is it still available? And if so, where can we find it? And give us the name of it again, please.
Yes, the book is Shuttle Houston, My Life in the Center Seat of Mission Control. It's available on Amazon or any of your favorite booksellers. Still quite available. We were hoping to have them available at the banquet coming up here, but apparently the agreement with the facility is that they can't do any selling.
Yeah.
So we're not bringing any along to sell. But I will say that if any of your readers, listeners, bring a copy of the book, I will be happy to sign it.
Well, and I'll tell you what, when we get done here, I'm going to go on Amazon and I'm going to buy the book because I'm anxious to read it, especially after talking with you on the air. It's going to be a fun read.
Good. I hope you enjoy it.
It's been, Paul, absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and I can't tell you much. I appreciate you taking the hour to be with us. And what was really neat is that while we were talking, your wife was out flying. She came in for a
while. Yeah, that's true.
That's fantastic. Paul, thank you, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks at the banquet.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
All right, hold on a sec. I'm going to talk to you off air. You've been listening to The World of Aviation. Paul Dye, our guest. The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, two locations in the Twin Cities, Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation.
World of Aviation is paid for by Thunderbird Aviation. Hear the top voices in conservative radio on your Amazon smart speaker.
Now streaming AM 1280 The Patriot. Intelligent radio.
Just ask Alexa to play The Patriot Minneapolis. That's Play The Patriot Minneapolis.
Hi, it's Keith Hittner Sr. here. Tune in on Sundays at noon for your Real Estate Chalk Talk, where we study the science of buying and selling real estate and the art of living in your home.
Get the solid real estate facts you need from Keith Hittner Sr. and Keith Hittner Jr. of Coldwell Banker Burnett and their team of experts. Tune in to Real Estate Chalk Talk on AM 1280 The Patriot every Sunday at 12 noon. Brought to you by the Hittner Group, the number one Coldwell Banker Group in the nation. Online at HittnerGroup.com. And tune in to Real Estate Chalk Talk every Sunday at 12 noon on AM 1280 The Patriot.
GodTube.com. Inspiration, comedy, music, faith, and fun. Get the best of GodTube every morning and start your day with a smile. Great faith-based videos sent to your inbox daily when you subscribe at GodTube.com, a division of Salem Media Group.
AM 12.